the ick, yeah. The negative was that uncertainty of, I don't know if I'm going the right way. I don't know. You know, I put myself out there in a thousand different directions, and we'll see who says yes. Oh, they did. Okay, I'm going that way then. So,
right.
I guess I fought the ick of that by providing myself as many options as possible.
Hello, and welcome to the 40 Drinks Podcast. I'm your host, Stephanie McLaughlin. You know, sometime in the years around our 40th birthday, many of us start to feel what I call the ick. Like some part of our life no longer fits, and you don't know how to get it back on track. I know that was true for me, and I fought against it, which only made it a messier process. But having 40 drinks with 40 people over the course of a year helped me escape the influence of that ick. On this podcast, I welcome you to tap into my stories and experience, as well as those of my guests, to help you emerge from your own ick and maybe even avoid some of the mistakes we made along the way. My mission is to make it common cultural knowledge that there is a transition most of us face around age 40, and then showcase so many versions of that transition that every single person approaching or recently turned 40 with dread in their heart knows that they are not alone. Today, my guest is David Hankins, whose transition came a couple of years after 40. You see, he joined the Army at age 22 and served for 20 years. So on his 40th birthday, he marked the milestone with black balloons and a party and the whole thing. But his transition really came 2 years later when he moved back into civilian life. Hi, David. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Stephanie. So glad to be here.
I'm thrilled to have you. It's interesting. Right now, I am in a little bit of a trend. I don't know if I could say a trend, a little bit of a loop of writers. My last guest was a writer, and you're a writer. And I have been known to take fingers to keyboards over the years. So this is fun for me to get to talk to writers. So welcome.
So glad to be here.
So let's jump right in. I want to start where I always start. Tell me about the forces that shaped you into who you are when we start our story. What is the prologue? Who were you as a young man?
So the prologue, I started off, went to college, studied criminology because I wanted to be a military policeman. I did Army ROTC. And you know, everyone told me, oh, yeah, your grades are great. You're going to get your first choice. And then the Army had a different idea, which the Army often does. And so I commissioned as a second lieutenant in the Ordnance Corps. And my first question literally was, what's the Ordnance Corps? What do they do?
So I have a brother who is very into ordnance. Mm-hmm. So ordnance is weaponry.
Yes, I learned that very quickly. But apparently... To the Army, it means maintenance because long story short, back in World War II, the Transportation Corps wasn't doing so great at maintenance and the Ordnance Corps was. So they got the mission and have had it ever since. And so most of the people that get that job go do maintenance. I take my car to someone else to change the oil. I'm not a maintenance person. So I was a little bit panicked. And then they said, oh, no. Don't worry about it. You're going to go to a unit to do ammunition management. And that's what I did for the first half of my career. So I joined the Army, did logistics management, focused on ammunition, and absolutely loved it. Traveled all over the world with that. Went to Afghanistan once, Iraq twice, and then lived in Germany for a total of 10 years. By the time I was done with the Army, I retired as a lieutenant colonel at 20 years, and that was really, that's the prologue in a very, very short, condensed version of what shaped me and what led me to that transition at 42 years old.
Yeah. Quick tangent on why the Army?
So it was actually because of my brother. My brother did the classic, I don't want to live at home anymore. I'm going to go join the Army to get away from home. If he had actually listened to the first recruiter he talked to, he would have gone to the Defense Language Institute, which he's a genius with languages, and could have gone to be translator or something like that. Well, he really, really wanted to get out. He joined the infantry because it was the first thing he could sign up for.
And wow.
He did it for 4 years. And he was like, I'm not an infantry
wow.
person. But in that time period, I was making my decisions of what I want to be when I grow up. And it was that classic, I want to be just like my brother. Yeah. I want to join the army. And he said, and this is almost a direct quote, you can join the army, but don't do it as a private. Do it as a lieutenant. Yeah. You get much more pay and the same level of respect. Yep. And I was like, okay, I like more money. And so then I went to college and became a lieutenant and joined the army.
That's great. How much older than you is your brother?
7 years.
Okay. He's a bunch older.
Yep.
And why was he so intent on getting out of the house?
I think it was the classic teenage angst. Yep. It was, you know, he wasn't getting along with the parents at that time. And once he was out of the army, they got along great. They were fine. So I think it was just that classic, like I said, teenage angst. And, you know, he just had to get through that. And I was the youngest of four. And so I was the one that watched what everyone else did and went, oh, that's not a smart path. Let me do it this way. And so that kind of guided me into the army as a smart decision.
Great. So you joined at 22 and spent 20 years in the army, which is interesting because the milestone of the 40th birthday. And tell me how that's for you. Was it even a milestone?
It was a milestone in that, you know, you have the celebration, maybe a couple black balloons, but, you know, the tongue-in-cheek type stuff. But it was a point where I was looking forward. I knew I was going to retire at 42 because I was getting to that point of I was having more bad army days than good army days. So it was time to change over to something else. And so I was planning that process of transition, which would be 2 years later.
Okay. You were really looking at a transition later. So 40 was a little bit of a sort of pulled punch for you.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. Tell me about retiring from the Army. What is that like after 20 years?
So process-wise, the Army is a giant bureaucracy, so they have a process for everything. And it's the kind of thing where if you work it far enough ahead of time, there are no surprises. You just work through the bureaucracy, do all the paperwork, jump through all the hoops they give you, and they give you lots of hoops, and then you're done. And so that was, I'm very much a planner. It's part of the logistics background. Yep. And so I was planning all of that. So I knew exactly what step, as soon as I was able to drop my retirement packet, I dropped it. As soon as I was able to apply for an internship, I applied for it. So I had as much lead time as possible as I could get for things because I knew there would be crises. And if you do routine things routinely, you have time for the crises. Yep. And so that's what I was trying to do. And so that transition process-wise was actually fairly smooth. Emotion-wise, it was interesting because I was leaving the only thing I knew for 20 years and going to be a civilian and not having to listen to the big bureaucracy anymore. And so, yeah, there were definitely some feelings as I figured out what the new me was.
Yeah. What were the positives of leaving the bureaucracy and the negatives of leaving the bureaucracy?
So the positives are definitely that I don't have to do the nitpicky things that they required, like get up at 6:30 in the morning to go do physical training. I do still get up and work out, but if I feel like sleeping in one day, for whatever reason, I can. Right. I'm not going to get an email that randomly says, hey, you've been selected to insert task from the Army. You know, go to Iraq, go to Afghanistan, whatever it is, I'm not going to get that. I can volunteer for that kind of thing because I now have a job working for the Army again, but that would be my choice instead of theirs. So that's definitely the positive of that. The negative, it's the people. I miss the people. And as I've gone from organization to organization, I really learned that it was the people that made the difference. If I was surrounded by people who are caustic, I hated the organization. If I was surrounded by people who are positive, I loved the organization, regardless of how good the organization actually was.
Sure. Sure. So now you're headed towards 42 and the military, as I know from a dear friend, has sort of classes on how to be a civilian. and how to transition from regimented life to civilian life. And that takes a couple of years to work your way through, right?
It can. And I took as much time as I could to work my way through it because I had that time because I planned it. You can actually do it all very quickly. So if someone gets like a medical discharge, they go through that same process, but it's all very quick because the Army wants to get them into the VA system and off of the Army bill. It can be fast, but it doesn't have to be.
As you're looking towards 42, who did you think you wanted to be when you left the Army?
I wanted to be someone who spent more time with family because I did not like having to be told, hey, you have to go wherever for a month, for a week, for a year, and miss all the things as my daughter's growing up, whether that is concerts at school or performances or piano lessons, or whatever. I wanted to be there for those things, you know, be able to say, yes, we are going to take a vacation. We are going to go somewhere for the weekend. And so whatever job I found, I wanted it to be something that I could clock out and forget about the job until I clock back in. And so that was person I wanted to be was someone that was there for the family more.
So as a side note, just to fill in a blank here, you met your wife while you were in college. Yes. Is that right?
I was in college. She was actually in high school still when we met.
That's right. I forgot that.
Yeah. We got married about a year before I joined the Army.
All right. So she was in college?
Yeah. She had just graduated high school when we got married and headed off. First assignment was Germany.
Wow. Holy cow. Okay. All right. So you get married and then you guys have a daughter.
So 10 years. So we were married for 10 years before we had our daughter. And because we got to Germany, we're like, we want to spend our money traveling Europe because we're young and I'm making more money than I've ever made before because in college you have no money. So any job is good.
Right.
So we waited 10 years to have our daughter. And then she was born in Germany. 12 and
all right. Okay. All right. So you want to be someone who is around more for your family and who can make your own decisions about what things you're going to participate in or need to do. All right. So as our clock winds down on the Army, we know what kind of job you're looking for and kind of generally what you want from life. If I remember from our first conversation, a new flower starts to bloom here.
Yeah. So as my daughter was growing up, I always liked telling stories. And I would tell her bedtime stories, tell her stories so that she would pay attention and actually eat dinner and all this stuff. And it was just lots and lots of stories. That oral tradition became a written tradition because she started poking holes in my stories when she got old enough to go, wait, no, yesterday you said. I started writing it all down and discovered that I had 2.5 books worth of mid-grade stories that I thought were fantastic. That was the beginning of my writing journey. And I don't know how deep you want me to go into that, but yeah, that was the new thing. I was submitting my manuscript to agents and most of them were ignoring me. I have now come to learn that that is the way of the writing world.
Right. That's pretty normal.
And so I got kind of discouraged and this was at about the four, I was about 40 at this point. So about 2 years from my transition. And so I said, I need some credits to my name. Because nobody knows me, and that's why they're not even paying attention. So I thought, I can find a short story contest. I'll write a short story, and I'll win the contest. My enthusiasm and optimism are unparalleled. I had no idea how hard the thing was that I was diving into. So I dove into short stories, learned how much I did not know about writing, and started teaching myself based off of the classes I could find, books I could read. I found a writing mentor who really helped speed up my learning process so that I could become a professional author. And I started actually getting published. I got some short stories published. And then 18 months after I switched over to short stories, I won a contest called Writers of the Future, which is the biggest amateur talent search for science fiction fantasy in the world.
Wow, congratulations. That's amazing.
So they have 12 winners every year, three per quarter, and they bring them down to Hollywood for a week that ends with a red carpet gala that is broadcast to about 3 million people. I didn't know it was broadcast to that many as I was standing up there on stage. So my hands were shaking a little bit because, you know, there's 400 people in the room. But but yeah, that was really the start of my writing journey, which, you know, in parallel with me getting out of the Army and trying to find a day job to pay for the mortgage, because very few writers actually pay for the mortgage with writing.
Right.
All of that's happening in tandem. And things happen in threes, I've discovered.
Mm-hmm.
So I hit my final day in the Army. I got the call saying I won the contest, and I got a call saying, hey, we've got a new job for you. You didn't even apply for this job, but we really, really, really want you. Someone else gave us your resume. Will you please come work for us? And that was all within a 2-week span. And
wow.
So I was like, this is clearly what I need to be doing.
Clearly. Holy cow. Talk about setting yourself up for like post-retirement careers. Did somebody give you a home as well?
Well, I already had the home.
A home, a car.
I bought the home with the knowledge that I was going to retire. So I made sure I had the lowest payment possible because I didn't know what my retirement check was going to be. You know, if I got a new job or if it'd take me a year, no clue. Yeah,
right.
I had all that set up. But yeah, the job did kind of fall into my lap. But
wow, that's
part
amazing.
Of that is also through networking. As I was retiring, there's a local group here for veterans, and the guy who puts it together, he's like, okay, we've got all these employers in the area. They come to this event at a local brewery. All the people who are in the process of retiring, they come in. He says, and now talk. And that's it.
Okay.
Hi, we'll get back to the conversation in just a minute. If you're in the midst of a midlife transition, I want you to know that my whole reason for doing this podcast is to make sure that you know you're not alone. David's story will probably resonate most with people who have served in the military, but it still contains some common elements. I've seen a lot of flavors of midlife transition by now, which got me thinking. If you've got an issue you're facing, or something you're going through, if you're feeling the ick somewhere in your life, I'll bet that I could recommend an episode or two that would be relevant for what you're experiencing. And hearing how someone else worked their way through something like what you're going through might help you see paths you hadn't noticed or give you ideas on how to make your way through the transformation. I've heard a whole lot so far, so go ahead and try to stump me. Think of it as your personal podcast prescription. I'd love to make one for you. Email me at stephanie@40drinks.com or DM me on social @40drinks. And don't forget to spell out the word 40. All right, back to the show.
That's great. Well, that's great to have a resource like that to at least, you know, help make connections. Because I know at the beginning of my career, well, not at the beginning of my career, but when I moved back to New Hampshire in my early 30s, networking became a huge part of everything I've done since. Mm-hmm. You know, I spent a good solid 10 years, you know, doing all the business community things and at all the events and all the after hours and all the chamber meetings. And, you know, you meet everyone. And so, you know, from then on out, not that I don't do anything anymore, but it's, you know, the volume has turned down quite a bit. And, but you have these connections that can help you, you know, bridge into different opportunities and stuff. Mm-hmm. So yeah, networking's a big part of it. So, okay. You win this contest, and was it with a piece that was from part of what the stories you had been telling your daughter? Was it that had evolved, or was
evolved
it something else?
From that. So the very first short story I wrote was called Hell's Bureaucracy. And it's about a guy who he's the only one that can see the demons and angels around us. And he had this demon whose only job is to torment him through bureaucratic means. So all the paperwork that gets lost, that's the demon being a jerk. You know, the sending that email that never should have gone to the boss. That's that, you know, he's like, I swear I didn't send that. So anyway, that had grown from her asking, you know, Daddy, what do you do at work every day? I'm like, I do logistics. I sit at a computer. It's really boring.
Right.
So I tell her, right, I fight bureaucracy in all its forms. Some days I win. Oh. Some days I lose. And her 2 to 3 year old mind literally thought I went to work with a sword and fought a slathering monster named bureaucracy.
Oh my God, that's beautiful.
And so
I love that.
In fact, I realized this one day when it was a weekend. I had to go in to grab something from my office. And she's like, can I come with you? Sure. Yeah, no problem. And she puts on this outfit. Like I bought her that was a cape, a shield, a sword. And she came, her face was like, I'm ready to go to war. And she walks in.
Oh my God.
She draws her sword. She's like, where's bureaucracy? I'm like,
oh my God, David, that is the sweetest story I have heard in so long.
And so I was like, well, I'm going to grab my sword off the wall because of course I have a sword on the wall. Who doesn't?
Of course. Yes.
And we roam the empty hallways of my office fighting bureaucracy.
Oh my God.
So that short story grew from that.
I'm literally touched by this. Like I'm welling up. This is unbelievable. I love this. Holy
cow. And so that short story was the first one I wrote. I submitted it to the contest. It won an honorable mention, which was the first feedback I'd gotten that wasn't friends and family. I got hooked on the short stories. And my winning short story is in the same world. It actually has a couple of the same characters in it. And it's mm-hmm. called Death and the Taxman. And it's about the Grim Reaper trapped in an IRS agent's dying body. And he has to regain his powers before he dies and faces judgment for his original sin.
Oh my goodness.
And so it won the contest. It was published in Writers of the Future, Volume 39.
Oh,
in
wow.
May of 2023. And then
holy cow.
I took that short story and expanded it into a full-length novel of the same name, Death and the Taxman. And this is actually coming out on Tax Day 2024. Because of course, and
how perfect.
Yeah. And yeah, I've just dove straight into the whole publishing world. I'm self-publishing that book. I ran a Kickstarter for it, which did really, really well. It got like Kickstarter Project of the Day, Project We Love, wow. Funded at 595%. I've gotten rave reviews from the people who got the pre-orders. And so, yeah, that is where I want to be able to pay my mortgage. And so I'm working toward that so I don't have to continue doing this job that I'm a contractor for the Army right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Who's your author idol? Whose life would you like yours to look like? Or whose output would you like yours to look like?
Actually, I would have to say we have a slightly different writing style, but I was at a conference this past week and I got to meet David Weber. David Weber is a international best-selling author of science fiction. His best-known series is the Anna Harrington series. And I learned a lot from reading those books about, you know, like leadership lessons. And, you know, it's military sci-fi, you know, so he has a lot of tactics and stuff like that. And he just writes fantastic books that people gobble up. And that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
My writing style is very different. I don't write the serious military sci-fi like he does. And so my style is more like Terry Pratchett. I don't know if you've heard of him.
I've heard the name.
He wrote the Discworld series. In fact, he had a character called Death, who was the Grim Reaper. And I had to work very hard to make my Grim Reaper a different character. It's like, I don't want it to look like fan fiction.
Yeah.
I've had people tell me that who have read it, who are like, this is like Terry Pratchett. Like, thank you.
That's a great compliment. Yeah. Yeah. I've read a lot of John Scalzi. Mm-hmm. I dabble in some science fiction. Mm-hmm. I'm really, really excited for you that your first book is coming out this year. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's very exciting. I've at the conferences I was just at, I was able to sell copies. And every time I gave that spiel, people would laugh at the same point. Of, you know, the Grim Reaper trapped in an IRS agent's dying body. They're like, that's perfect. I want to read that now. I'm like, yes, please. Here, you can buy the book now.
Right. Oh, that's fantastic. So, you know, I'm listening to you and feeling like, well, gee, David, transition's going pretty darn well for you. Have there been any pieces or parts of it that are that might fall into what I call the ick? Have there been pieces that have been uncomfortable, or where you've been stuck, or where things don't feel like they fit well? Because you're telling me a story where, goodness gracious, everything is just dropping into place for you, which is wonderful.
A lot of it is the uncertainty of what's actually going to come next. So like, as I was submitting to Writers of the Future, I would submit and, you know, the story would come back, you know, with perhaps an honorable mention, but not getting any farther. I submit to lots of markets for my other short stories to try to get them published professionally. And the rejection rate is 98%. So I get a lot of no. Same thing as I was applying for jobs. I got either a lot of no or a lot of no response. And so the job I did end up getting was one I'd looked at and said, no way I'm not applying for that, because in the job description, it said up to 85% travel. I'm like, I'm retiring to spend more time with my family, not less. And it wasn't until they called me and said, no. Yes, the contract does say that. But in reality, people are traveling about 1 week out of the month. And, you know, the travel is to, you know, some cool places, some not cool places. I was looking at that and went, I could do a week a month. I like to travel. And everything in between those travel times, the requirements are very low. So I can clock out of work and not have to think about it again.
Right.
And so, you can have your weekend. I'd say the negative was that uncertainty of, I don't know if I'm going the right way. I don't know. You know, I put myself out there in a thousand different directions, and we'll see who says yes. Oh, they did. Okay. I'm going that way then. So, I guess I fought the ick of that by providing myself as many options as possible.
So two other things that are typically involved with it, if you don't mind, I'll just go exploring in your life. I'll just go rooting around in your life. As we reach that milestone of 40, you start getting feedback from your bones and ligaments and all the rest of it. Now, you spent 20 years in the Army doing PT so how are you doing in that respect?
I am getting a disability check from the VA because I, like, my knees, my back, my shoulder, things don't work as well as they used to. And so my wife is a CrossFit coach, and she does all the things CrossFit, and I can't keep up with her because of pain restrictions. Like, I can't do burpees because when I do the up, down like that too much, it's too much compression on the spine, and it hurts for 3 days. And it's not the, oh, my muscles are sore. It's a legit hurts.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I had spinal surgery late last year, so I'm aware of what the legitimately hurts actually means. Okay, so you're starting to get some of that stuff. And what about, if you don't mind, and if you do, we can come out of this alley, but you and your wife have been married for a very long time, and you got married when you were both very, very young, which in a lot of cases, people grow up and they don't necessarily grow in the same direction.
Right.
How has that been for the two of you as you've come into
actually
middle
done
age?
Very, as I was in the Army, she made the conscious choice of, I'm going to follow you around the Army. She tried to do her own career as she did, or as we moved. She studied for a massage therapy school before I joined, but it's really hard to do that kind of thing as you're moving every 2 years, because you have to recertify in every state or country that you move to.
Right.
And those processes are typically lengthy, and then it's time to move again. So she made the choice to be the stay-at-home wife and mother, and was very happy with that. And I was very happy that I, you know, had a partner that could do the other half of the things that I don't do well, like cooking. Right. I eat very well. I don't cook very well. And it's something that she enjoys doing. So we found the things that she's good at, the things that I'm good at, and those complemented each other. And so we were able to continue growing together as we grew up, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really fortunate. If I remember correctly from our original conversation, she's just hitting this 40 mark now, yes. Right?
And so her transition is actually happening about the same time mine is. So we've been in place now for 4 years. And so she has started coaching CrossFit, actually has a job where she's getting paid regularly, which is not something that she's had steadily before this because of moving. And, she went and got all of her certifications for that. She's currently going through a class for certification for to be a nutritionist as well, because it complements. And is setting herself up as an expert in her field, being a CrossFit coach, working a couple of different venues to see what it is that she likes and how she likes to do it. And, there were about 3 weeks, 4 weeks last month where she went, oh, I'm doing too much work. I'm exhausted like every waking hour. Right. She's like, okay, got to dial it back a little bit. And so, finding those points.
Yeah. Yeah. Understanding the feedback and taking the right steps to get back to a good balance. Yep. That's great. Well, David, I got to tell you this, your story is a wonderful one, and frankly, one of the easier transitions that I've come across. So I'm so happy for you, that yours was easy and that you were able to see some of the signs along the way and make the right, like you were saying, send your energy out in so many directions that you would at least have something would come of it. You saw the writing on the wall and you did all the right things.
Yeah, because nobody stays in the Army forever. Nobody stays in any career forever. So it makes sense, as someone who likes to plan things, to plan it out. And I was thinking about it as I was driving home from work today, of one of the reasons why it feels like everything just falls together. And a lot of it is perspective. Like I said, I get told no a lot. And I can, take that, internalize it, feel the self-pity, rage at the world, or I can look at it as an opportunity. And so I try to have that positive outlook with whatever the situation is. I might rage a little bit because the anger will be there. But in the end, I try to turn it into a positive of, all right, what are the opportunities here? What can I learn? Yeah. How can I, grow from this problem? Because like as I was in the military, I definitely had jobs I did and places I went that I did not want to go. There was about a 1 to 2 year period where I was very, very angry at the Army, and the Army didn't care. I had to find that balance, had to find a way to, turn that negative into a positive.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's really about attaching, right? Mm-hmm. Attaching to the outcome and not attaching to that feedback. What you're talking about is a lot like being in sales, right? The salespeople hear no more than they hear yes. And I have experienced that as a business owner and somebody who's looking for new clients, and you have conversations and they think they go really well. And then they, and it's like, nah, we decided to go a different way. I had one of those last fall. I was like, really? I was there for like 3 hours. Like, I thought we were really connecting. Mm-hmm. I was like, nope. Okay. But you can't attach to that. Otherwise, it'll ruin your peace.
Right.
Well, that's a wonderful lesson and a great place for us to wrap up today. So I just wanted to say thank you so much for coming on the show with me and for sharing your story. And I'm very, very excited for your book to come out on April 15th.
Well, thank you very much. I'm so glad that you responded and said I could come on the show. This has been a lot of fun. And for anyone who is interested in the book, Death and Tax Man, it's available for pre-order wherever fine books are sold. So Amazon, Barnes & Noble, stuff like that. And you can find me at my website at davidhankins.com. If you like to read lighthearted stuff, that's what I write because that's what I like to read. And there's not nearly enough humor in the world.
That is true. And I'll put all those details in the show notes for today's episode. So anybody who's listening will be able to go down and just click on those and find you right away.
Thank you so much. And I'm so glad you had me on.
Thanks so much for listening today. This was such a lovely conversation. I was struck by how comparably easy, I'll put that in air quotes, David's transition has been compared to some of the stories I've heard, including Allison Doss, who I spoke to last week, whose transition was very much at the opposite end of the spectrum as this one. And David's story got me thinking back to the framework of change versus transition. I know I've talked about this a couple of times this season. This is coming from that book, Transitions, by William Bridges. And he describes change as being external and circumstantial. So for David, change was his retiring from the army. That was the change. Getting a new job, that's the change. But transition, according to Bridges, and the human experience, I guess, is the internal and psychological part where we reorient ourselves to the new situation. And in David's story, I think the reorientation is ongoing. You know, he's really only a year out from his retirement, so things are still really kind of in motion in his life. He's certainly already redefined himself as, quote unquote, someone who spends more time with the family. And I think he's still working on redefining himself as, quote unquote, a professional writer. Though he's had some early success, very clearly. But whether he's able to make that his full-time job is still an open question. And whether he sees the answer to that question as a success or a failure, regardless of which way it goes, is also still open. Another line from the Transitions book works well here. In writing about age 40, William Bridges says, "Adulthood unfolds its promise in an alternating rhythm of expansion and contraction, change and stability." And I think that really describes David's situation very, very well. He left the army after 20 years of service. That's a big change. He took a job as a contractor with the army. I think that really represents stability, both financially and in terms of what he's spending his days doing. It's not completely different than what he did while he was in the army. And yet, his pursuit of becoming a professional writer is all expansion, all change, all building the plane while you're flying it. He talked about all of the education he had done to get himself where he is today. And I'm sure there will be more of it as he continues this journey. Interestingly, there's another element of his life that I think represents this statement well. His wife is changing how she's living her life. After 20 years of being that stay-at-home mom, the stay-at-home wife. And I think that represents a change in both of their everyday experiences. So it's both expansion in that she's doing new things, building her own business, creating the life that she saw for herself after he retired from the army. But it also represents contraction because she's not playing that same role at home that she had for so long. So that means that things have to shift in their home life in order for other people to pick up some slack, so to give her the opportunity to follow her dreams. So it's interesting how you can look at situations and see both sides of that coin in, I don't know, some, several, all, many of these situations. And let me finish today with a quote, another quote from the Transitions book from the same section that I referenced a moment ago. Bridges says, "At 40, not everyone finds life coming to a halt or standing on its head. Rather, from the early 30s on, most people find life moving in alternating periods of stability and change." And I think David's story is such a great illustration of the fact that those elements of stability and change can happen either one after another, like I pulled from his story, or they can happen concurrently. So I'm very curious to know if any of this resonates with you, if you can see these same elements of expansion and contraction in your own life, if you can see them sort of linearly, like contraction, then expansion, then contraction, right? One after the other. Or if you can look at a situation and see how both things happen in parallel, sort of at the same time. All right. Next week, you are going to meet Sarah Letourneau, who is turning 40 in September this year, and who is thinking a lot about what 40 means to her. I had such a wonderful conversation with her, and I can't wait to share it with you. When she first reached out to me, she said, and I quote, "How can I possibly have a negative attitude about my 40th year when A, some amazing things are going to happen, and B, so many other good things are sure to happen in the years to follow?" What a wonderful attitude. I can't wait for you to meet Sarah. I'll see you next week. The 40 Drinks Podcast is produced and presented by Savoir Fair Marketing Communications.